Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Well, it's that time of the week again. It's the Brad and Body Podcast, and we've got another beauty this week, Body. Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm extremely well. Thank you for asking. Easter has been a little bit of a chocolate fest, but very much ready to talk to our new guest.
Well, this man is arguably one of Australia's greatest basketballer. He is a great guy, included stints in the NBA, Russia, Spain. He was actually selected the 18th pick overall in the 97 draft pick. He's played for the Tigers. He's played for the Southeast Melbourne Magic, the Victoria Titans. He then went on to an illustrious career playing for the Dallas Mavericks and the Chicago Bulls in the NBA. He's came back to the Victoria Titans. Then he went to Russia, had an outstanding career. He's a two-time NBL MVP, a two-time NBL MVP grand finalist, three-time NBL champion, five-time All-Star, the Defensive Player of the Year in 2008, led the league in rebounding for a couple of seasons, blocked shots for four seasons, most improved player, NBL best six-man in 01, the Gaze Medal winner, which is the greatest Australian player for the year in 2002, and also won a gold medal in the FIBA Under-22s championship, where he was MVP as well. So I am talking to none other than the great man, Chris Anstey. Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me on your show. I'm looking forward to it.
As he was running through your resume there, I just thought, is this Chris Anstey we got on today, or Will Chamberlain? Defensive player, 1 year leading blocks, 1 year rebounding. Like, geez, you've got quite a versatile big man there.
You know what? It's funny. My younger brother nearly disowned me when I won the Defensive Player of the Year award. He swore that Anstey's never played defense. he nearly disowned me. That one nearly got me kicked out of the family.
Well, we had Simon Mitchell on last week, and he said we at the end of the segment with our interviewees, we like to throw a few names at him. So we threw a few names at him, and one of them was yours. And he said he felt that you were undervalued for what you'd done in our league. And I sort of felt perhaps that was because you're more outspoken than the average player, and that maybe, you know, in subsequent NBL administrations, they're not as keen to promote that because they're a little bit fearful of you. Do you feel there's any element of that?
I don't think I felt underappreciated. I suppose I made choices along the way that weren't popular to do, you know, essentially for my own personal development, what I thought was best for it. I don't think I made many friends when I left the Melbourne Tigers after my rookie year. And I had a great few years learning the game with Al Westover and Des Middleton. And, you know, I had my rookie year with the Melbourne Tigers. And it was interesting, Brian Gorgian, once it got to an appeal stage when I'd chosen to go to the Southeast Melbourne Magic and leave the Melbourne Tigers, Gorge said he knew that he had the right guy when I got to the NBL tribunal. I think it was Ken Madsen, there was Lindsay Gaze was there in the NBL, and of course Lindsay and the NBL were really close, and I literally, you know, said that I wasn't going to improve and become the player I needed to be in that system. And it was probably a little bit blunt, but, you know, looking back, I think what the Melbourne Tigers was when I arrived there was a very well-established club who brought in veteran players who were at the prime of their career and implemented them or put them into a system that suited them. And there wasn't as much development because those guys, you know, Robert Sibley, Warwick Giddey, Mark Gretke, Andrew Gaze, the imports, they were established. What the Southeast Melbourne Magic was a group of kids who wanted to work harder than we'd ever known and had this journey we wanted to go on that I didn't think the Tigers could provide me. And then, of course, I was there for 3 years, and then, you know, I left the Magic to go to the States and bounced around a little bit, came back to the Titans. And, you know, by the time I got back to the Melbourne Tigers, you know, the very first game, I was as nervous as I'd ever been in a game because I caught a lot of negative publicity when I left the Tigers. And there were a lot of things said by the Tigers fans about the character of person they assume that I was for leaving. And yeah, they've got long memories, sporting fans. So I was nervous coming back, and you know what, the very first possession, I'll never forget it, Al Westover put me in the traditional feeder spot. You know, if anyone knows, first and thirds of the Tigers always ran, and told our point guard to hold the first cat, wanted me to rip through and go baseline and see if we could get on the rim. And I think Geordie Cullen might have been guarding me. They were waiting for me to swing the ball, and I ripped through and I had a dunk and sort of ended up hanging on the rim and looking at our bench, and all of our fans sat behind the bench. And I reckon in about 2 seconds it alleviated all of my fears, and I knew I was going to be okay. But I think maybe because I bounced around, I was gone for a long time, and probably the time I was most successful in the NBL was the time that probably least fans were watching the game. But there's a long answer for one question, Bobby.
No.
Well, that's all we have time for today.
We'd like to thank Chris Anstey.
Actually, when you were telling that story, it actually took me back into the past when Melbourne Tigers, as their previous identity, Melbourne Church, were the dominant club, and they had a lot of veterans, Lindsay, Billy White, all those guys were playing. And then a guy called Ken Cole was playing with them, and he sort of followed your path, went to St Kilda, and St Kilda was a bunch of young guys, and they built them up and worked extra hard and harder than they'd ever worked before until they toppled Melbourne Church. And then, so it's kind of an interesting thing, the history repeating itself. The thing I'm interested in next, though, Chris, is how did it go that you got to the NBA? Was that as a result of your MVP at the World Under-23s?
No, that was after. I mean, I was by the time the Under-23s came along. It came out of the blue a little bit where, unbeknownst to me, Brian Gorge had been fielding various calls from the United States, from scouts and some assistant coaches, and asking a bit about me. And he sort of, was reasonably open to the conversations. And he called me into his office. I'll never forget. And he said, you're going to have to go and get yourself an agent. I sort of said, oh, yeah, no, look, my dad does all that. And he said, no, I'm getting enough calls now where they're looking, and the USA trips we've been on, and we've played the colleges, and I think one game I had 40 or 50 on Arizona or Texas. I had a couple of really good games, and I was still young and naive, and I didn't understand that Texas and Arizona or even big schools. I just thought running the middle lane for a big guy was something you should be able to do, and if you got a few dunks, and that was great, but it turned out to be a little bit rarer than probably what I knew it to be, because it was normal for me that I could move, and that was something that the NBA would appeal to the NBA. And so I said, oh, where do I start? And he said, he literally, to tie it back into Adelaide, he said, look, we don't know many, but Mike Dunlap says that there's this new guy who, he's been as good an agent to deal with anyone. He looks after Rick Brunson. He's a family friend. He's got a legal background. We trust him. And so I called Leon Rose, and Leon flew over to Australia, met me, and I didn't even speak a word to another agent. I signed Leon, and he was incredible for putting me in front of NBA teams, getting me workouts, hiding me from the workouts where he knew my draft positioning could slip. But as anyone who follows basketball would know, Leon went on to represent guys like LeBron James, Dwayne Wade. Yeah. He managed CAA, and now he's president of the New York Knicks. So he's got a phone call coming soon. He owes me a job. I might need to pick up the phone at some stage. But no, it was literally that simple. It was a couple of phone calls, and he said, get back to work and forget I exist, and I'll take care of the rest.
What a great story. So let's fast forward to the 97 draft then, obviously. Now, if memory serves me correct, you were still in Melbourne. Is that right? You didn't go to the draft. Was that right?
Yeah, we had a game in Sydney against the Sydney Kings on the weekend before, and by sheer fluke, I hit a couple of free throws just before time expired to win that one. And
I was in that game. I was in that game. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate that.
Well, I'm very pleased. I'm pleased.
the month leading up, to be honest, I hated playing basketball. I just felt like every set of eyes was on me, and the NBA notepad started turning up, and it just felt like every single little thing I did was being evaluated, and I didn't like it. And so I got through that Sydney game, and I felt a sense of relief when I walked into that locker room, and because they had everything they were going to get now, and I suppose I could just go and be me. And so I got drafted during the week. We got invited. I think Mark Beretta might have even organized it to go into the TV studio, and they streamed it through, and the team came in. Yeah. We had to do weights in the morning and then train after it. So literally the NBA draft was on our lunch break from Magic training and weights. We went back. We played Sydney again that next weekend, and it was the most free I'd felt on a basketball court in over 12 months. And to this day, I suppose no one's ever probably seen the game, but sort of remains one of my favourite games of all time and probably one of the best I think I'd ever played up to that point in time.
Did we lose by 30, didn't we, that game, didn't we? Was that about
that was, right? Yeah, that was it. That was it, Brad. It was about 30, and I even made a spin move on the fast break. That's how...
And dunked on Brad, by any chance? Wouldn't have been too hard.
Brad wouldn't have been in the paint.
Is that inside the three-point line? Nah, I don't know what you mean. Mate, let me fast-forward a little bit too. 26 points against Boston, career high. That must have just been unbelievable.
Yeah, it was. That was... something I was really proud of, I suppose. You know, there are a lot of people, including myself, who at times didn't think I should have been in the NBA. And I knew from the second I stepped off the aeroplane that I needed to develop a jump shot because I was going to get killed if I was just a post player in the NBA. I just couldn't compete physically with some of the athletes that were over there. And so slowly I started building this jump shot. And in that game, I think every basket of mine outside two were mid-range jump shots. A lot of pick and pop, and it was special that it came together. And what I suppose now that I've retired, there was something special about doing something for the first time, and that was an Australian high at the time. And it was not long after being drafted from the NBL, which was the first. And again, these things that I kind of, they were just part of my journey that maybe have become a little bit more special as years go by. And it was a special night. And the bow on that one was the game was actually on March 17, which is my mum's birthday, and it was St. Patrick's Day. She was in the crowd, and it was against the Boston Celtics.
Lovely.
So it was just a real poetic, I suppose.
I love the story you told at the Lexus Center on the morning of the draft when Andrew Bogut was taken at number one by the Milwaukee Bucks some time ago. And you were one of the keynote speakers. And I remember you were saying something that, along the lines of the when you saw your first NBA check. Do you want to just... Do you know the story I mean?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I can't remember that function, but I don't remember the story.
What you said was you looked at the check and you thought, man, they could have got me a lot cheaper.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. It was because of course back then we couldn't sign contracts from overseas. So I arrived in Dallas. I went to the hotel. I slept. Leon met me in town, and we went to the office and to practice. But before I could practice, I needed to sign my contract. And so I went in and Leon negotiated the maximum possible for the draft, that number draft pick. And, I'll never forget the club saying, does Chris need something, a check here just up front to get settled in. And I'm thinking maybe they'll give me a few hundred bucks for lunch or, a dinner tomorrow night, maybe even a deposit on the apartment. And Leon looked them dead in the eye and said, yeah, $250,000 should do it. And I went to look at him and as they're signing this check. And I thought, what? I'd played my year at the Melbourne Tigers. I made $7,000. And I thought I was being overpaid at the Magic and I was making $60,000 a year. And it was a different world. And it took a little bit of adjusting. And, over the years, you come to understand that you hand a 19, 18-year-old kid millions of dollars and ask them to be humble and behave like we think they should behave as observers. It's a really difficult thing to do because I'm sure I was a dick for a while. But it was just a different world.
Yeah, and you've also got on your resume that you beat Michael Jordan.
God, your podcast is not long enough for me to tell this story.
We can extend.
That remains one of my career highlights in so far as I knew it was going to be the only chance I was ever going to get to step on the same basketball court as him. I'd been playing well. This was not long after the Boston Celtics game. And it's funny, as you get older, you talk about emotions. The range of emotions leading into the game was excitement and nervousness and anxiousness. And then I didn't play a second in the first half. Don Nelson went with Sean Bradley to protect the rim and an AC Green in a small ball lineup. So I went from playing 32 minutes a game, and I didn't play a second in the game. It was the only chance I was ever going to get to play. And my emotions at halftime went from that to upset and angry and, you know, disappointed. And so I'll never forget sitting in that locker room thinking, this is before social media. How am I going to get into a photo with Michael Jordan? Because my tennis friends aren't going to believe it. And all I'd come up with at halftime was, I'm going to foul this guy so hard if I get on him garbage time that someone, he's going to have to fight back and someone's going to have to take a photo. And so the photo I'm going to have hanging on my wall of me and Michael Jordan is going to be of us in a fight. But Don Nelson put me on early in the third, and I couldn't go and do that, of course, at this stage. And we started coming back, but the first time I touched the ball was I went up to dunk it. You know, Hubert Davis turned down a three and passed it to me. I went to dunk it and I got fouled, ended up under the basket. The worst thing I've ever done on a basketball court is as I walked back to the free throw line to shoot my free throws, I looked around and I look and it's Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, Luke Longley on the side, Phil Jackson, Steve Kerr. And my head, I'm like, what the hell is this kid doing? Who's this? Yeah. And I shot two of the worst free throws in my entire life. And at that moment, I just remember, this can't get any worse. I'll probably be dragged. I might as well just try to enjoy whatever time I've got left on the court and sort of ease my way into the game. For some reason, Don Nelson left me on, and Finley was incredible. Sabalos hit a three to pretty much send it to overtime. And in overtime, I got subbed on with 3 and a bit minutes to go, and I hit a jumper, I had a dunk, I had a little thing with Dennis Rodman, and we won. And yeah. It becomes one of those really interesting stats. There's not the list of people who've never lost to Michael Jordan in a Bulls uniform is actually quite short. and I found myself on it. But it was just one of those absolute incredible moments. Not many people would have believed it to be true. I would have been the same. And here we are talking about it 25 years later.
Fantastic story. So let's move on now. And you obviously left the NBA, went to the Victoria Titans. But I want to talk about your time in Russia. We didn't personally get to see, Russian leagues play and stuff. But, my understanding was that, it is just one of the toughest leagues. And were amazing over there. Talk to us about your time in Russia.
It was that. And not even just the on-court. The off-court was brutal. From the time we probably hit December all the way through until March, it didn't often raise, the temperature never often raised above minus 20 degrees. Very, very few people spoke English, and it was like living in isolation. Ironically, lockdown for me seemed reasonably easy because I'd been through it before in my mind over there. And having said that, I went from 2 months in, I thought I'd made the worst decision of my life, and I couldn't wait to leave. And ironically, we signed Martin Mercer, and he was at some level a bit of a savior for me because he spoke English. I played with him at the Mavericks as well. He spoke English and Russian, and was a bit of a conduit for me to learn a little bit more. And I got through that first season, and I was really proud of the way I performed, and had a really close bond with Eddie Shannon, who I know Adelaide 36ers fans would be aware of. And we got through that season. I had no idea that I'd come back for a second and a third, but it's amazing what you can get used to. I'm proud of the European Championship we won that very few people know about. I grew up a lot as a basketball player because it was just me, and I didn't have the support of the Magic or the resources of the NBA behind me. It was just, you turn up, you do your job, or you get cut and you get sent home. And that was tempting at times.
Can I also say, if I'm not mistaken, that was the first in Russian history, that Euro
Challenge. It was, and I believe they still have a public holiday in Kazan for being the first sporting team in Russian history to win a European title since it was introduced to the European Union. So it was massive. So, what it did, though, it really was funny. Al Westover called me after my second year, and he said, I might be getting the Tigers job. Are you interested? I said, I'm really interested. I want to come home. And, I got a really nice offer to come back my third year. Al ended up not getting the job. And so, when he called me the next year and said, it's mine, I said, I think I'm ready. And I came home after that third season, I think knowing that I wouldn't come back. But my daughter at this stage was 4 years old, and we came back just before the winter holidays for the kindergarten we'd enrolled her at, but she'd never been to. And the difference in her just spending time with English-speaking kids in 1 week was just that noticeable that I called Alan, let's just do this. I couldn't bring myself to take her away from that again. And, yeah, that was the only team in Melbourne. It was great to be able to play for Al because he was such a big part of getting me started, I think. And at some level, I think we felt like we were both helping each other. You know, he was helping me come back to Melbourne, and hopefully I was helping him get a foothold with a reasonably successful team, you know, in his first coaching gig.
Yeah, you did pretty all right.
Yeah. Let's move to the NBL now. I'm curious if you heard or read Adam Ford's comments.
You know I retweeted it the other day, buddy.
No, I didn't see that. I did not see that. I swear on my
I had no idea.
You know that he's talking crap, Chris. You know Boddy is. Of course he read it.
No, I thought I did. I enjoyed his comments. The first thing you think is, like he said, he's going to get fined. The second thing is, you know, that the Wildcats fans are going to jump up and down.
Right.
But the thing is, he was measured. His arguments were based on statistics and facts. And I didn't read it as him blaming the referees for a loss. I read it as him starting a conversation, and I've been saying this for years, is that we need to invest more into the training, the education of our referees, because the game's gone past them. I think our game is one of the best leagues in the world. But, you know, I have, like you've mentioned, I've played in the States, I've played in Europe. The quality of referees over there is significantly better and more consistent than what we have here in the NBL. And I think if we can just find the money, the training, the people in charge to invest and make the referees' jobs easier and allow them to be more consistent, I think our league will go to another level. And I think that was the conversation Adam was trying to have.
Yes.
And it's that sort of conversation is a really, really tricky one as a new head coach because, as he said a couple of times, he's 19 games in and he knows how it sounds, but I don't think he was far off in anything that he said.
I agree completely.
Yeah,
I absolutely do. And we'll probably discuss this a bit more after this segment is over because we're at the finish of it, Chris. This is at the point where we throw names at you and you just give us a one word or a one sentence or an anecdote, whatever you choose. And I'll throw the first one at you, Mark Worthington.
I used to hate him. He's a warrior and we became best mates, I think, out of a bit of a mutual respect. But one of the first guys I wanted to bring in when I became a coach, because, you know, interestingly enough, you've probably seen the footage of Wurtho hitting the three in Perth to win that game against the Wildcats when I was coaching. And my argument with Larry when I was trying to bring him in, but Larry didn't want him in, was that Wurtho's the type of guy that goes to Perth and wins games for some hand on heart. That was the first game we played in Perth. And you see me running over and pointing at Wurtho saying, that's why we recruited you. That's why we recruited you. Because it was a bit of a battle to get him in.
Great story. I'll throw one at you now. Sam McKinnon.
Champion of the league. I think one of the most underrated wing defenders and wing rebounders internationally of all time. And, you know, the season he had when Brisbane won the championship was incredible. The time I had with him, some of the things I saw him do as a kid at training were out of this world. And, you know, he's probably one of the closest Australian guys to making the NBA that we've ever. If Sam McKinnon was what he was now as a kid, he'd be a first round draft pick.
Right. If he was what he was at Brisbane, at a younger age, I'm sure he would have had a very successful
Even just with the exposure, I think. If he did exactly what he did now, but Australia had the same exposure, I think he'd be a first-round draft pick.
That's totally agree.
Okay, I've got another one for you. Barry Barnes.
That's an interesting one. Barry and I never really I suppose, saw things the same way. I never responded well to yelling, and you know, I guess he was very critical of the younger guys on the team. And you know, I came through in an era where he was very comfortable with Brad G. Longley, Heal, Blaha, those guys, and you know, I was never his favourite, and he was probably never my favourite. But you know, he was able to get Australia as close to a medal at Olympic competition as anyone has, and
yep.
I'd be interested to hear his views, because we often say that you know, the team we're sending to the Olympics is the most talented on paper. We've got the greatest chance, which makes what he was able to do with his team getting to the last four an even greater achievement, if that's the case.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, yep. Good call. Yeah, good call. I'll go again. D-Mac.
The best point guard in Australian basketball history, and just the superstar human being. You know, what, forget the basketball, what he was able to do for his six kids and raise them, and you know, geez, what he's been through with losing a daughter, and I was with him in Vegas. What he's done for this league, he's just a superstar human being. I don't think, yeah, he changed the type of import I think we got into this league, because he brought that streetball element. Just a superstar.
Are you okay with that? Are you okay with that, Brad? Because he just described D-Mac as the greatest point guard of all time. Are you all right? You know, you're able to handle that?
Oh, I thought I was classed as a two man, but that's fine, mate. No problem.
My mistake. I got one more for you, Andrew Gaze.
The greatest, I think the figurehead of Australian basketball. You can't have a conversation globally without mentioning Andrew Gaze's name. The greatest scorer in maybe international basketball history. You'd put Oscar Schmidt there, and of course there've been NBA guys who do it differently recently, but you know, he was one of the greatest contributors to the success and the growth of basketball before it became popular, and you know, it's great to see him remaining involved these days as well.
Fantastic.
I've got to say, like, I mean, we could go all day, and it's interesting you say, you know, about D-Mac being the change. Boddy and I talked about it last week, and I think you changed the scope, yes, of where this league went when you came into this league. Like, for a five man, if you call it, to sort of, you know, step outside, hit threes on a very high clip and be able to, you changed that league when you came back. So,
I'm not that smart, and I used to sit at the top of the shuffle before I was allowed to shoot, and everyone who used to guard the shuffle would just sit in the middle of the key and bang Gaze and bang Copeland as they cut through, and then the ball would swing through the five and they'd be wide open. I thought, what if that guy was able to shoot?
Right.
And it just seemed too simplistic because no one could do it. And then eventually I thought, well, five-man defenders are really slow and they can't move. So what if you could teach yourself to do this? It just seemed simple. You know, I shot the ball great in Europe, and by the time I came back to the Tigers, I had enough confidence to be able to shoot pretty much any shot I wanted to shoot. And thanks to Al, I had the license to do it.
Phenomenal.
You know, D-Mac and I used to always say, again, we thought we complemented each other fantastically well, because I was able to help him out with a bunch of assists, but I opened up the lane for him through my ability to shoot the ball, that pigs were often scared to go and camp in the lane, because I'd float to the three, and if they did that, if they came and guarded me, D-Mac used to just thank me. You're like, thanks, big fella, I got a few on that today.
He used to cause
he needed an extra second to get through the lane.
Yeah. Paul Rees used to hate you. Yeah, he used to cause real dilemmas.
Ben Pepper used to get the most fun. He was always fun talking to Pep. Bloody hell, who am I supposed to take? It was good fun.
He's I remember there's, you know, when you talk about dynamic duos in this league, you and D-Mac are right up there when we speak about them. So, mate, we could keep you all night. We just want to thank you so much. You are an unbelievable basketballer. We talk about that, but more importantly, you're just a great guy. I've done commentary with you as well, and I just know you're just a bloody nice guy, mate. And we just want to say thank you so much, and we wish you all the best in everything you do. Whatever you do is a success anyway. And, you know, Chris Anthony, you're a great bloke. Thanks for coming on, mate.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me and letting me tell a few stories. Nice to tell them. Thanks for having me.
Oh, what another great interview, buddy. I tell you, these guys are just fantastic. And, geez, he's a good guy, isn't he? Just so easy to talk to.
And when he was a player, he got it. He really understood like the media's role as well. Because whenever he was coming to town, he was one of our favourite villains. There was a whole bunch of them, Brian.
Yeah.
But he got it. And it was funny because we used to have a press room down the back where the reporters sat, and it was a room without any windows or anything. It was like a cell, what we deserved as media. And there was one time.
Your bedroom. Keep going.
One time he was walking past, I didn't know it was him. We were playing the Tigers that night, and there was a knock on the door. So I said, yeah, come in, because the media room was open. He opened the door and he poked his head in, and all the other media guys absolutely, you know, clenched, thinking, oh my God, what's going to happen? Nodge and Anstey, what he's been writing.
And he's going,
how you been? Hey, we shook hands, just had a bit of a quick chat, like, because I know Chris. So it was funny. And then the other guy's like, what just happened?
even when you listen to him talking about the Ford thing, you know, how he's saying it was educated and he used that. Like, he's just a well-educated man when you talk basketball, Anstey. You know what I mean? He knows his stuff. So, oh, mate, we could talk for hours. I love him. I think he's great. Mate, let's move on to the NBL. Right. Obviously, the round's finished.
Yep. Let's go straight to your Rosen Rattler.
Yeah, look, my rattler, I think, is DJ and Josh Giddey. I think those two have done a fabulous job this round. I thought they were great. They went undefeated in round 12. They took care of the Hawks. And I thought Josh Giddey was excellent. He was a couple of dimes away from a triple-double. And Daniel Johnson as well. I thought they were great, and they deserved that win.
Yeah, undefeated in round 12. Yeah, they're on a one-game streak. Fantastic.
That doesn't matter. They're undefeated. Did they lose?
No, they were good. They were good. Rocky and Bullwinkle in action. That's fine. Good with that. Yep.
Come on, give me your nasty.
Oh, my nasty is the Bunnings Player of the Week allocation. I think obviously they've been told, or the commentators have been told, you can only give it to someone from the winning team, which to me is an absolute farce, because we've got the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix beating New Zealand in a pretty tight game, and Colton Iverson goes off for 26 points and 24 rebounds, a double that hasn't been done since before Noah got the Animals onto the arc. So, you know, like... And he doesn't get it just because they lost by 7 points. They give it to Yanni Wetzel. Now, Yanni had a lovely game, 18 points and 10, but he was often opposed to this guy who's got the best numbers that we've seen in decades. He was the man of the match. Give it to the guy that is the best player in the game, not necessarily the best player on the winning team. I think that's BS.
Well, I just want to go on about, Colton Iverson was unbelievable. Does he look like he is out of breath from the second he walks on the court? Like, he looks like he's got nothing left in the tank.
Yeah, he looks like he must have been on the Lamar Patterson diet or something, and he's just, I mean, not physically, but like the way he's so exhausted, you know.
I've got to ask a quick thing for you. I find it weird Jared Weeks is not getting minutes.
Yeah, it's almost like in comes the new young man, William McDowell-White, and okay, Jared, you've moved back down to being not important. I don't get that either, because his minutes, you give him, if he was playing 15 consistent minutes a game, his contribution would be huge.
He's done it pretty much his whole career when he started as Agent 97, as he was known in Wollongong. Every time he comes on, he makes it, and it's, you know, makes a difference. And it's not like New Zealand are playing flat out unbelievable.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I don't get a lot of the coaches, Brad. I mean, like Alex Madronia opens for the 36ers in Perth. Yeah, I don't know if he's had a minute since then. You know, I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking.
All right, I'm going to quickly run through these games, because there's a fair few of them coming up in the next round. You just say Illawarra at Illawarra versus Brisbane.
Contingent on Tyler Harvey being back. Tyler Harvey back, Illawarra wins. Tyler Harvey not back. I'm leaning toward Brisbane, but they seem to have checked out. Honestly, they look like they've checked out. All bar Sobey.
Sydney taking on Perth on Thursday night. Do we even ask? No one can beat Perth, can they, at the moment?
I'm going for Sydney, so I'm on a completely different page to you. I thought they got absolutely robbed in Perth. Sorry, that's the way I feel. I come into this without bias. I'm very happy that Perth is the most successful club in Australian professional sport. I got no angst with Red Army or any of them, but the way that game was officiated, Sydney got robbed, and I think they'll be fired up. But then, you know what? So will Perth, because of the process.
Yeah. 100%. I think Perth will be too, and they just find a way to win. Illawarra versus Southeast Melbourne, mate. Phoenix is humming at the moment.
Yep.
Yeah, they're just humming. Sorry. Adelaide versus Perth. Who you got? Anyone but Perth? Yeah. United versus Breakers. United.
United. Yep.
This will be a good one. Kings on Sunday at home versus the Phoenix.
Yeah, that is a good one. Phoenix, I'm going to go for. Yeah, Phoenix.
Kings. I'm going to go to Kings for that one. Hawks versus Cairns. Oh, geez, I'm going Hawks.
Yeah, I am too. But again, this is Tyler Harvey, Cam Bester. We want to see them back in the lineup.
Yeah.
We want to see Daniel Adele back on the bench.
Yeah, that hasn't worked, that one. United versus Brisbane. Oh, man. Unless United. Brisbane get their super. Yeah. And Breakers versus Perth. Perth got three games this round, all on the road.
Yeah, well, you know, they win as much on the road. And then, you know, the road's no great fear, holds no great fears for the Wildcats. I'll pick them. That would be in Launceston, wouldn't it? That should be a fun game to watch, you know.
Yeah, it will be.
Let's hope the Tasmanians get out there. Get out there.
Yeah, because that was supposed to happen a couple of weeks ago, but with COVID it got changed, so it was good. So, buddy, we're done, mate.
Yeah, Brad.
That was a really good wrap. Chris Anstey again, thank you so much. That was fabulous. Buddy,
We've got to have him on again because I want to ask what he's doing now. We've never actually got to that. So, all right.
But anyway, make sure you check out Boddy's articles, BOTINAGY.com. And, of course, we want to thank Piranha Media as well. Fabulous to be in association with them. And, Boddy, have a fantastic week, mate. Let's look forward to this next round.
Yep. Ciao.
Mate, what are you doing for Easter this week?
Well, you know, I ate a lot of chocolate. But I was coaching in a tournament, but eating that chocolate, I had an upset stomach, officiating chocolate. Yeah, I need to take a couple of days off.
Man, I've been looking at you on this podcast for a few times. I don't think you've just been eating chocolate at Easter, mate. What's going on there?
We've got this Latvian thing that we make called Pask. It's a long story. But... anyway, look, I'll talk to you next week, but yeah, mate. Pasca's really tasty. Really tasty.